Good morning. It's good to see everybody out throwing stuff back here. We welcome those joining us on Facebook as well. I've seen a little story. It reminds me of myself a little bit more every day. A little girl was watching her mom brush her hair, and she noticed a couple of white strands. And she said, what are those white strands in your hair, Mom? And she said, well, every time you do something wrong or make me cry or are bad, I get some of these little white hairs. To which the little girl responded, what have you done to Grandma? Well, welcome to our Friends and Family Day. Again, we welcome everyone joining us. I'm going to reread what Will read earlier, that parable of the 10 virgins. And it begins in Matthew chapter 25, verse 1. But then the kingdom of heaven will be like 10 virgins who took their lamps and went out to meet the bridegroom. Five of them were foolish and five were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them, but the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and slept. But at midnight there was a cry, here is the bridegroom, come out and meet him. Then all those virgins rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out. But the wise answered, saying, since there will not be enough for us and for you, go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves. And while they were going to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was shut. Afterward, the other virgins came also, saying, Lord, Lord, open to us. But he answered, truly, I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you do not know neither the day nor the hour. I think there's a line in there, those verses, that's pretty sobering and just maybe even terrifying. And it's that later part of verse 10 where it says that the door was shut. That this today, maybe on Friends and Family Day, maybe the closest thing to a hellfire and brimstone sermon you will ever hear me preach. So I thought this was the perfect day to break this out. You know, when I was little, I was pretty scared of the dark. And my mom would lay down and she would read out of a book or tell me a story. And then as I drifted off to sleep, she would try to slip off to her own bed. I combated this by falling asleep with an arm draped over her. So that way I would know when she tried to move, I'd have that figured out. More often than not, I slept heavier than she left. But that wasn't always the case. And I was never above just walking down the hallway to Mom and Dad's room and climbing in to bed with my folks. My dad, surprisingly, was not a big fan of this. So my mom would escort this inmate back down to his cell. And I think she was a little annoyed, but I would sleep like a baby. And finally, one night, I went to sneak in and a lock had been installed. I guess at 15, they decided it was time. I'm just kidding. I wasn't quite 15, but I knocked on that door, but nobody was having any of it. I heard an angry, go back to bed. And that's when I learned that I think my folks loved sleep more than they loved me. But I think then you have kids of your own, and you're like, oh, get two locks, get a deadbolt. Well, the parable of the 10 virgins is one of three parables that Jesus tells in Matthew 25, and all of them have that same theme of preparation. They're all about being prepared. You don't know when Jesus is going to come back, so be ready now. But before we dig into Matthew 25, the original manuscripts, of course, didn't have the chapter breaks and the verses. Very, very seldom do you see a completely new thought from the one that preceded it. And that's certainly the case here with Matthew chapter 25. The words recorded in chapter 24 have much relevance to what we read. So you have to back up a little bit and read that. In Matthew chapter 24, Jesus has a lot to say about two events that sometimes get combined into one. It's sort of like if you remember Chicken Little, that chicken that got hit on the head with the acorn, and he was just convinced that the sky was falling, and so he would go and tell anyone that he came across that the sky is falling. Well, there are really no shortage of Chicken Littles today that will tell us that the sky is falling. What we call them end times forecasters. I think the fancy word for it, I've been practicing saying it all week, is eschatological. I still didn't say it right, but that's what they are. That's the study of end times. Plenty of folks that are ready to say that the events that are happening in the world right now point directly to the fact that Jesus is coming soon and the world is on the edge of annihilation. Anytime you see an earthquake or a tsunami or wars or whatever it may be, they all point to the fact that the world is going to be destroyed and that Jesus is coming back. The problem, I guess, with that is that when Jesus walked the earth, he didn't even know when he was coming back. So some of these end times guys seem to know more than Jesus does. The other problem with that is that the first part of Matthew chapter 24, that often gets pointed to as proof text that Jesus is coming soon, those events have already happened. The first part of Matthew chapter 24 are talking about events that have already occurred. We refer to it as the fall of Jerusalem, or some as the abomination that causes desolation. And verse 34 is really the key to chapter 24, where it reads, "Truly I say to you, this generation will not pass away until all these things take place." Again, this generation, the one who Jesus was speaking to in that moment, they were going to witness firsthand all of these things that went with the fall of Jerusalem, and they certainly did witness those things. There were numerous conflicts under Caligula and Claudius and Nero. There were famines and there were earthquakes. Plus, as we've said, isn't it odd that these end times forecasters can tell you when Jesus is coming back, but after these very words, Jesus says, "I don't know when I'm coming back." Another key to understanding all of this is verse 42. Verse 42 is where the conversation changes. Verse 42 says, "Therefore stay awake, for you do not know on what day your Lord is coming." And if you know what Paul tells the church in Thessalonica, in 1 Thessalonians 5, Paul says, "Now concerning the times and the seasons, brothers, you have no need to have anything written to you, for you yourselves are fully aware that the day of the Lord will come like a thief in the night." Paul and Jesus are basically saying the same thing. Quit trying to schedule Jesus' comeback tour. You don't know when it's going to happen. And that's the whole point, right? That's the whole point. Quit trying to give an exact date. What makes you think that you can predict this with any degree of certainty? But, and this is an important but, Jesus is coming back. We do have his word on that. We know that this life is going somewhere. We know that Jesus is coming back. We don't have his ETA. Well, we don't have his day of arrival. But these Chicken Littles, they don't have that either. But we do know that it's going to happen. We may even pray that it comes soon. So the fact that Matthew chapter 24, at least at the first part, is not talking about the return of Jesus, that doesn't mean that he's not coming back. Now notice the rest of Matthew chapter 24, verse 43 says, "But know this, that if the master of the house had known in what part of the night the thief was coming, he would have stayed awake and would not have let his house be broken into. Therefore, you must also be ready, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour you do not expect." Verse 45 says, "Who then is the faithful and wise servant whom his master has set over his household to give them their food at the proper time? Blessed is the servant whom his master will find so doing when he comes. Truly I say to you, he will set him over all his possessions. But if that wicked servant says to himself, 'My master is delayed,' and begins to beat his fellow servants and eats and drinks with drunkards, the master of that servant will come on that day when he does not expect him, in an hour he does not know, and will cut him into pieces and put him with the hypocrites. In that place there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth." Now, you just imagine getting that phone call of a number you don't realize, and you're pretty sure it's probably an auto warranty, but it could be somebody having an emergency. And so you go ahead and answer it, and the person says, "Hey, good evening, this is your burglar. I'll be there between the hours of midnight and 5 a.m. Be good if you could leave your door unlocked, but if not, I've got tools, so don't worry about it." That would be a strange conversation, right? Thieves don't typically call and schedule their arrival time. You don't get that, so what do? You make preparations unless in case something like that happens. You put up cameras, or maybe you buy better locks or alarms or whatever it may be that makes you feel certain that you are prepared if someone breaks into your home to steal your possessions or maybe even harm you. So all that brings us to Matthew chapter 25 and these parables about preparation. Again, Matthew chapter 24 is the warning. It's the alarm bells going off. In Matthew chapter 25, this is how you respond to the alarm. Here's how you prepare. Don't waste your talent. Take advantage of the opportunities when they present themselves. Feed the hungry. Give drink to those that are thirsty. Visit the sick and the imprisoned. Be a sheep, not a goat. Matthew chapter 24, again, is that warning light, letting us know that something is on the horizon that we better get prepared for. And we all know about warnings, don't we? We get Amber Alerts on our phone. We get tornado warnings on our phone. An alarm maybe wakes you up in the morning. The refrigerator door dings when you don't shut it all the way. I'm coming back, is what I always tell it. Don't worry about it, fridge. I'm on my way back. But our world is full of noise. Alarms and buzzers and rings and the white noise that's going on around us all the time. We know about warnings. But let me ask you this, and I've done this, so I'm not coming from a place of pride. Have you ever ran out of gas? How do we run out of gas? We have a warning light. Mine tells me even how many miles I have left before I better get gas. My cousin in his car can press a button on his phone, and it shows all the places on his trip that he can get fuel at, and he can schedule places he get fuels at. So how do we run out of gas? Most of the time, it's because we ignore the warning light, right? We ignore the signs. Why do some die in tornadoes? A vast majority is because they ignored the warning. They've been told over and over again to go to the lowest level of your house, find an interior room. They hear the sirens going off. And Missy's looking at me really hard right now because I always say it's never happened before, right? They've never hit our house before, so why worry so much now? The warning signs are there. So how do we respond? I believe the five foolish virgins ran out of their oil for the same reason that we run out of gas. They ignored the warnings. Have you ever been guilty of not trusting the gas gauge? You see it there on orange. You see the lights on, but you think, I've got enough to get there. And so you check the miles to go, and you see 8 miles, but that's just some manufacturer's suggestion, right? They don't know for sure. It's just an estimate, not a firm number. So you go a little bit further. Well, salvation is a personal decision, and it's one that we've been warned about the consequences of taking advantage of that opportunity. You look at this story about the wise and the foolish virgins, and you think, wouldn't the Christ-like thing to be for the wise virgins to help out those foolish virgins until you understand this is about a personal choice? Only you can make this decision. Only you can take care of yourself when it comes down to personal salvation. So when we look at this story and we say, it's all on me, no one else can get you across the threshold. It is strictly up to you. So it's your responsibility to prepare. It's your responsibility to heed the warnings. And scripture, of course, is filled with warnings. Over and over again, we see the warning lights and signs. Jesus, at the end of the parable of the 10 virgins, says, "Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour." In other words, be prepared. Another reason people run out of gas is that they have false confidence in the moment. Everything is going to be just fine. I've driven with the gauge this low before. You think, maybe I'll just get gas in the morning. And then you wake up and you're halfway to work. You think, well, I'll get gas after I get off work. I don't have time to get it this morning. And eventually, you run out of excuses to get gas and you break down on the side of the road. The warning light, we sometimes think, is precautionary. It's just a suggestion. Things aren't dire yet. Maybe that's how the foolish virgins were thinking in that moment. They were excited about the bridegroom, as they should be, but in all their excitement, they didn't consider that there might be a delay. And they should have. In Jewish weddings of that day, a couple didn't just say, "I do," and then zip off on their honeymoon. That's not how it worked. The bridegroom would meet the bride at her house or at a location that a wedding would be suitable for. And then after the wedding festivities, they would keep going for about a week. They would have a parade that would go through town to where they would eventually end up at the location where there would be even more celebrating. Usually, that was the bride's house, and the parade would have lots of stops along the way. All the bridesmaids would have been waiting there to go into that celebration. And again, it could take hours before that procession would get there. They should have expected a delay. Again, that was common in Jewish weddings, yet they were foolish because they didn't prepare for the delay. And again, despite what these end time forecasters say, they don't know when the bridegroom is coming either. We don't know when the bridegroom is coming. He could come before we finish this morning. He could come before tonight. Our lives could end tomorrow. Everything might seem fine in the moment, but be careful not to live with a false sense of confidence that we have more time than we do. There are those who run out of gas because they wrongly assume they will have time to get it later. When we go to Missy's folks in Nebraska, it's pretty spaced out to find places to get gas. You had better take advantage of a gas station when you see it, because there are really long stretches where there are no gas stations. Sometimes we think there's always more time. I'll get right with God just a little bit later in life. I'm going to sow my wild oats right now while I can. I'll get right at some point. The wise person says, "I better get gas right here because there isn't much left after this place for a while." The wise person says, "I'm going to be more than prepared. I'm not going to cut it close. I'm not going to bank on tomorrow because there might not be another chance to get it right, so I have to be prepared." That's the universal meaning. Matthew chapter 25, all those parables, including the one we are looking at, is all about being prepared. If we dig a little deeper, you want to remember the audience, as Will brought out in the scripture reading. Remember who Jesus is talking to, his disciples, those perhaps who are wanting to be disciples, and those who were the religious leaders, the scholars and the scribes, and they were certainly at the forefront of these parables. They are the ones who are going to be locked out, because it was always intended for Israel to come together and meet the Messiah around the table and have this glorious banquet and celebrate for all eternity, but Israel missed their king. They forfeited this opportunity. They refused to repair. The fulfillment of the law and the prophets would culminate in this elaborate wedding feast and celebration that the bridegroom arrived, and again, Israel seemingly missed it. Verse 12 says, "But he answered, 'Truly I say to you, I do not know you.'" The bridegroom here didn't even know his bride. How does that happen? How could God's people have missed the Messiah when everything in their past pointed towards the anointed one? Who is Jesus speaking to here? Well, the disciples, and his messages to them is that you don't miss this either. Don't you fall into the same camp. Make sure that you are prepared. Hopefully we're paying attention to the warning signs. Hopefully we're reading scripture with expectation. Hopefully we're living our lives in anticipation. We always talk about being prepared for the worst. Maybe we ought to spend time preparing for the best. How do we prepare for the best? How do we pack our bags and be ready when Jesus returns? Well, first, you want to be prepared for Jesus' second coming. Then I think we should live like his first coming mattered. After a parable of the wise and foolish virgins, Jesus tells another parable about a man going on a journey. And before he leaves, he entrusts three servants with each with a certain amount of money or talents. To one, he gives 5 talents. To one, he gives 2. And then to the last one, he gives 1. The first and second servant, they double their talents. The third is afraid, and so he buries his talent. He didn't lose it, But he didn't increase it either. And the master returns, and he's incensed at that third servant. And he calls him wicked and lazy. Why? Because he's playing it safe, and he doesn't take faith when you play it safe. If I don't perceive risk, then why would I need God? Stepping out and taking risk in faith assures my need of God. There's no good reason to do nothing. There's no such thing as a zero talent person. Don't bury your talent until Jesus returns. Live again like his first coming really mattered, and have a risk-taking faith until he does return. And I think the second thing is be a sheep. That third parable in Matthew chapter 25 concerns the day of judgment when Jesus separates the sheep from the goats. What is the deciding factor on those who are sheep and those who would be a goat? Well, the deciding factor is those who took the opportunity to be Jesus to those who needed Jesus. They gave drink to those that were thirsty, and they gave food to the hungry. They clothed the naked. They visited the sick and imprisoned. Those are the sheep. The goats are the ones who forfeited that opportunity and did nothing. Paul tells the church in Thessalonica, he talks to them about being prepared for the day that Christ returns. This was a problem for them because many of them were anticipating Christ's return really fast. And what's the use of doing any of this stuff? We're not going to go to work. Jesus is coming back. Why would we waste our time working? Paul says that's not how this works. In the meantime, between now and not yet, you keep living your life. You keep doing the work of God. No work, no food, right? I used to have a teacher that said, no loaves for the loafer. Looking at me when she would say that. I finally get it. But make sure you are doing what you should be doing, because the moment you stop and you just sit still is when you become idle, and that's when problems can occur. These people in Thessalonica were busybodies and troublemakers because they were not being active. Until Jesus returns, the hungry need food. The thirsty need drink. The naked need clothing. And you know what goats do? Goats are the ones that sit around and gripe and butt at other people. Sheep do something. And then finally this morning, live as if today is the day. The longer it takes for something to happen, the more sometimes we wonder if it ever will. It's really easy to get complacent and think, well, Jesus hasn't came back in thousands of years. Is he ever going to? Or does it really matter if I prepare today or not? And of course, the answer is yes. Paul would tell the church in Corinth in 1 Corinthians 7, beginning in verse 29, that this is what I mean, brothers. The appointed time has grown very short. From now on, let those who have wives live as though they had none, and those who mourn as though they were not mourning, and those who rejoice as though they were not rejoicing, and those who buy as though they had no goods, and those who deal with the world as though they had no dealings with it. For the present form of the world is passing away. And again, the key to that verse and understanding it is that time has been shortened. Paul had in mind that the context of his writings here is that Jesus is coming back. And he believed Jesus was coming back sooner than later. And because Jesus is coming back, you don't have time to sit around and gripe with your wife about your marriage. You don't have time to celebrate too long. You don't have time to focus on the things that are worldly because Jesus is coming back. Focus on the things that are eternal. Make certain that you are getting things in order so that when Jesus comes back, you aren't just sitting waiting for the call to board. No, you are being Jesus. You are being Jesus until Jesus comes back. Live with expectation. Jesus is coming back again, so we should live like it. And so this morning, as we finish up, I'll close with the question of what do you want to be doing when Jesus returns? I think I'd like to be singing or serving or washing feet. I want to be doing Jesus things so that when Jesus returns, he finds me doing those things. I want to be looking into the sky and saying, Lord, come quickly. I want to meet him in the air. I want to be found doing something meaningful. I want to be a well-prepared bride so that when the bridegroom returns and says to me, well done. This morning, live with urgency. Jesus is coming back, and we should want that to be as soon as possible. But maybe if you don't, maybe it's a preparation problem. Maybe you've never put Christ on in baptism. Maybe you've never heard that story of Christ being born to a woman and living his life to be crucified, to be buried, to be resurrected in 3 days. Maybe you haven't heard that story, but maybe you need to. Maybe you need to put Christ on in baptism to be brought up to walk in a newness of life. To live like Jesus, you have to belong to Jesus. So this morning, if that concerns you, we urge you to make that decision. If you are a Christian and need the prayers of the congregation, now would be an opportune time to come as together we stand and we sing.